Paul. Welcome to With the Wind, Science Revealed. Today's show, I interviewed Josh Getzgau. He's no stranger to this show, but he is going to talk about Pfizer-BioNTech's vaccine trial bait and switch. Wait till you hear how he explains what they did. And then Dee Dee Hoover interviews yours truly, me, about the vaccine-friendly plan. What does Dr. Paul still think? Is it okay? We're going to cover that. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. My thought today is challenges, loss, struggles. I've been through a few. I've shared before the story of losing my license at the same time that the practice was struggling to the point I wasn't sure we were going to make it. At the same time, I was basically having my marriage fall apart. I hit a really, really hard bottom there. For a guy who's usually very optimistic, I was even talking negative. I really didn't know what I was going to do. And perhaps you may have had a time in your life, or maybe now, you might be going through a time of struggle, a time of loss, a time of pain. What I wanted to reassure you, because I've been there, and from our deepest struggles come the most amazing opportunities for growth. In fact, I don't think we really grow well or quickly without struggle. So when challenged, how do we respond? What I used to do, and it got me nowhere, was responding from my head. I was a thinker. I didn't even know I was in ego. It was all about, me, keeping my look good. How do I work through this? When you can let that go, cut that down, break it down, listen to that inner soft voice. Listen to your heart and soul rather than that head and that ego. You start getting direction. Opportunities open up. Things you never even knew existed start appearing. It's about putting faith forward and rejecting fear. I'm far less fearful today, far less, than I was 3 years ago or the entire 20 years before that. And I had to get to a really rough spot to get there. So if you're still struggling, please just be patient. Don't give up. If you've got people who are giving you good input and guiding you to your heart and soul, go there. Do the self-care you need to get there and realize that it is out of this struggle that the best changes and the most impressive opportunity will appear. I just want to end with thanking all of you. So many of you have been there for me, with your love, with your support, and it does take a community, and you've been my community, so thank you. Welcome back, Josh Getzgau. It's so great to have you back on the show.
Great to be back, Paul. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. You're a senior lecturer there at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and I know you have got a lot of education training degrees in sociology and criminology, but what I've really come to respect is your investigative journalism. You write extensively and really detailed pieces. Some of it's at your Substack, jackanapes.substack.com. So if folks want to really dive in deeply to some of these topics, that's a good place to go. But we're going to talk about something that you brought to my attention, and that is this Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine clinical trial bait and switch. And I think I'm just going to hand it over to you, describe what a bait and switch is, and then in the context of what you're going to share.
Okay, so a bait and switch is a sales tactic where they'll advertise some item as being very attractive at a good price. You come into the store, oh, we don't have it, but here's something just like it. It's actually just even like better. Oh, and it's more expensive and all of that. So that's the idea of a bait and switch.
You
advertise one thing and then you get something else.
And so how does that apply to what Pfizer BioNTech did?
Okay. So basically there were when they started out with the vaccine trial, they were making the vaccines using one type of manufacturing process. They called it process one. But during the trials, they were developing, it was a very expensive way of generating the mRNA that was needed for the vaccine. So during the trials, they were busy trying to upscale this manufacturing process so they could sell billions and billions of doses of their. And so come like October, they've got a new manufacturing process down. I mean, they had it kind of developed before that, but at the beginning of October, they changed the protocol and they said,
and that's October 2021. Okay, well, October 2021.
Yes, no, October 6, 2020.
2020.
This is before they're done with the trial. So they're they started the trial late July, and they were making basically everybody in the trial got doses from this process one. Okay. Except they said, now in the protocol in October, they said, we're going to start testing people with this new process. We're going to test 250 people per lot of this process one. Of the process two. What we're now finding out about what's in these vials that are made with the process two is really shocking. Okay. But before I get to that, let me just put a pin on this. They said we're going to test process two lot on 250 people and compare them to 250 people who got the original recipe. So that kind of leaves it vague. But if you look, we have all these documents and we're going through, and what we found is that they only ever used one process two lot, which means they only tested it 200 people. And we can identify when they started testing it and at which testing sites. Okay, they don't actually have a record of who got which lot, but basically you can triangulate the information and then look. There were 250 people starting on such and such a date at these sites until the end of the trial. 250 people recruited, got dosed. They were the ones that got the process two lot. And guess what? Their adverse event reporting rate was 2.7 times as high as the other people that got in the treatment group. So just
270%. 270% more adverse events.
Yes.
I wonder why they stopped testing product phase two.
Right. Well, they did it. It was like at the very tail end. You know, they just had to get it in there because basically the regulatory agents, the EMA was coming back to them. You're basically doing a trial on a totally different product. You need to show us something. So they snuck in this idea. Oh, yeah, we're going to test it on 250 people.
So which product was rolled out to the world?
Process two. Everybody in the world got process two. That was only tested on 250 people. And by the way, we've never seen any report from them about those 250 people. They said they were going to do some kind of comparison.
So boy, let me get this straight. This is mind-boggling. All the stuff we've been reading since the get-go of these 40,000 people in the trial and all the information, which was actually pretty damning in and of itself. But that's not the vaccine.
We know they were hiding information.
Right. Yes. But that's not the vaccine that was rolled out to the world.
No, these are like totally different beasts.
I don't see how that's legal. That you're going to bring an experimental product to market that you only test on 250 people and then you recommend to inject the entire world.
Yes. Yes.
It's hard to believe. So
hard to believe.
What were the
and they don't do this.
I mean,
this isn't done. You know, this is a total breach of the regulatory process.
So what were the major differences, kind of in a simplified way for an audience?
Well, this is where things start to get shocking, okay?
Okay.
Basically, the key here is that you need to make a lot of RNA, right? You know, ribonucleic acids to generate the spike protein, right? That's where The vaccines are this mRNA that's wrapped in the lipid nanoparticles, goes into our cells, whatever. Okay. So how do you grow that? How do you make those mRNAs? So originally they were just using PCR replication and they were just replicating lots of mRNA. And then what they did is they started using bacteria, E. coli bacteria. And they basically genetically engineered the E. coli bacteria to produce this mRNA, the specific spike protein, mRNA, in their plasmids. So they was basically, you're just like duplicating, you know, letting E. coli bacteria grow and grow and grow and create all of these things. And then you take it, you cut it, and you're supposed, but the key thing is that you're supposed to clean it out. You're supposed to filter it out because there's DNA from the bacteria and the plasmids, and there's endotoxin from the bacteria. This is a very toxic pro-inflammatory membrane that's of the bacteria. Okay, so they're supposed to filter all of this out and clean all of this out. Now, a couple of months ago, sort of by accident, I won't get into the details, Kevin McKernan, he's a geneticist, was involved in the Human Genome Project. He's very well published, very well respected. He discovered, he was doing some sequencing on the vials for a different reason. He discovered high amounts of DNA that remained from the bacteria and also high amounts of endotoxin. And not just high amounts, way higher than the regulatory limits in terms of the DNA anyway. So, you know, sort of what are the implications of that? Well, you don't want to be injecting DNA into people, especially not in these ridiculously high amounts. And they're, you know, right now it's just speculation, like what different types of damage could this cause? So for example, the DNA of these bacteria is genetically engineered to be antibiotic resistant. So what if it integrates into the bacteria that you have in your gut?
Right.
And then suddenly the
E. coli is the major organism in the gut. And there are strains of E. coli, right, that are very dangerous for health, but most E. coli is friendly.
Yeah.
But now right. You're introducing E. coli that's going to cause mischief.
Right. And we don't know, you know, there's also theories that it could integrate with our own, you know, genetic material. So that's a huge concern and very troubling. But the other thing is this endotoxin, these lipopolysaccharides, maybe I'm not saying it right, lipopolysaccharides, mm-hmm. Basically they're highly inflammatory. There's a researcher, a chemist, has a chemistry background in Australia. His name is Jeff Payne. And he's been doing a lot of research on this. And you can see that you can link a lot of the adverse events that people are seeing from the jabs to endotoxin, known established sort of side effects of endotoxin toxicity. And he's also found papers showing that when you combine spike protein with endotoxin, it sort of multiplies their effects. The toxic effect of the endotoxin.
Wow.
So this is like very troubling, right? We, again, the spade and switch, they told us we were getting product one thing and we got something totally different that they haven't, you know, and there was really not a lot of clarity. I don't think they told anybody about this publicly. So we've seen documents that, the regulatory agencies, the EMA in particular, also the FDA they knew about this issue and they were asking Pfizer to give them all of these results, several things that they never really followed up on. And the most concerning one is they never followed up on the safety and the efficacy that this new, totally new formulation has in actual people. Right. They didn't have to redo all of their clinical studies on rats and toxicity and genotoxicity. None of that.
Wow.
It's
Unbelievable. I know you've shared on one of your Substacks, European Clinical Journal of Clinical Investigation, this graph, batch dependent safety of the BNT COVID-19 vaccine. It's got the blue line that goes up through the ceiling and then a green line and a yellow line.
Right.
I don't know if that one adds anything to this discussion, because it
definitely adds to this discussion.
All right, Josh, explain explain this diagram, where you got it and what it means.
So this was a paper or a letter published by some Danish researchers in the European Journal of Clinical Investigation. And basically what it shows is all of the different lots that were marketed in Denmark, that were sold in Denmark, how many adverse event reports were there for these different lots. And so basically what it shows you is that you can kind of break the all of the different lots into sort of three different trajectories. The yellow had very few adverse event reports. The green had more, but you know, still not as much. And then the blue were these lots, these hot lots that had extremely high numbers of adverse event rates. And you know, they're controlling by the number of doses per batch and all of that good stuff. So it's highly concerning because it suggests wide variability between the toxicity of the vaccines. And you know, I'm sure your viewers have heard about, you know, this idea of bad batches and things like that. And this is sort of visual evidence of this.
Yeah. I mean,
and can explain why, you know,
the magnitude of that.
Can help explain why some people seem to have no problem after vaccination and some people have their lives ruined.
Right. You would almost think that that yellow line that just shows basically no adverse events is probably saline. The blue one is astronomical. I mean,
yeah.
With less than 100,000 doses, you've got 8,000 adverse reactions. That's crazy.
You know, I'll tell you something. There's another interesting piece of evidence from the clinical trial. This is in a report that Pfizer submitted to the FDA, where, so basically, you know, the people that were in the placebo group started getting vaccinated in mid-December 2020. And by the mid-March, about 90% of them had been vaccinated. Their adverse event reporting rate was much higher than the original vaccine group, depending on what exact statistic you're looking at, you know, between 50% higher, three times higher just overall or adverse events related to the vaccine. So
was this the crossover placebo group for the original Pfizer trials?
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I was horrified that they chose basically to destroy the placebo group. I mean, we should have had a placebo group that lasted for 5 or 10 years. I mean, it's a brand new product. We don't know what it's doing. And within 3 months, they're vaccinating almost all the placebo folks.
Right.
It was insane.
Absurd.
And then totally those absurd. People fared worse. Do you think, Josh, did that have anything to do with the batch two approach?
Yeah, the process. Yeah, so.
Because those original trial 40,000 people probably got process one, maybe?
They definitely got process one, except for those 250.
Right.
And then by the time December rolls around, what do they have on hand? So we have some information that suggests that it was actually process one batches, but there's some differences in the lot numbers that make us wonder what is there. There seems to be something different about those, and we're not sure what it is. It could be that they were just sitting on a shelf for 5-6 months. And it's interesting because at that point, Pfizer hadn't done a study of how stable process two was beyond 3 months of sitting on the shelf or sitting in storage.
Right.
So they, even though they didn't know and hadn't done a study yet to see if their process two doses last that long sitting in the refrigerator, they anyway gave it, to all of these crossover placebo people, or at least that's what the documents apply. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something there that they did end up giving them process to, but at this point, we have no way of demonstrating.
Hard to know. So process one, if I'm trying to remember back, it was the Pfizer product that needed this extraordinarily cold storage. I mean, you had to have special units, correct?
Yeah. Well, process two needed even to be colder.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, how did they pull that off worldwide? There's not enough freezers that cold.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the number of people that were, I want to say removed, they were basically disqualified because there was something wrong with the way the vaccine was stored transported or prepared. They had to get rid of hundreds of people and take them out of the efficacy analysis, exclude them from the efficacy analysis, because they had improperly dealt with the vaccine. And that's a highly controlled trial where everybody's very well trained and that sort of thing. Imagine rolling that out, you know, to the world. It was.
Yeah. And those people that were excluded, have you looked at side effect profile for those folks?
When you're excluded, when they call you, they mean is that you're excluded from the efficacy analysis. You're not excluded from the safety analysis.
Okay.
So it's not like they just like remove you completely from the study. They just don't count you for efficacy.
Okay. Because I understand, I read a Substack you wrote about the people with real problems, side effects being somehow excluded.
No, I don't recall writing about that.
Okay. Maybe I'm mistaken. I thought there were several hundred participants who they were
okay. Dropped. So there were several hundred. There are so when they do the trial, when you get into the trial, they give you a number, okay, and the numbers are supposed to be handed out consecutively. And so when we look at the people in the trial, we should see consecutive numbers within each trial site, like 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004. But what we see is there are 311 just missing numbers. Sometimes there only one number gets skipped, sometimes two, up to, I don't remember, but nine, I think, was the maximum. Okay. So, and we don't know if this is a computer error, if this is human error, or if these people were removed because their information was damaging to the trial. Perhaps they had severe adverse events and they didn't want them recorded. We don't know that. We haven't been able to get any answers. But what's really interesting is that the Argentina site, which was the biggest site, has far more.
Was it Argentina or Brazil?
No, Argentina was the biggest. Argentina.
Okay.
And they had far more people missing than they should have. You know, if they're like 20% of the trial they had. Or they're like 12% of the trial and they had, I don't know, 30% of the missing IDs. So, you know, why is that? And what we found is that the most number that are missing on any given day is people who were recruited to the trial on the same day as our friend Augusto Rue. Now, the interesting, Augusto Rue was the guy who had a very serious adverse event after his second dose, which was the same day those people who at some point went missing would have gotten their second dose as well. So
you wonder about a hot batch.
Maybe there was a hot batch and they had to get rid of some of these people's information. Now, Augusto Rue, you know, he's the guy who had pericarditis and other complications. They misrecorded the adverse event and then they changed it again to suspected COVID-19, all kinds of shenanigans with him. So, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to just erase people from the trial. It's very suspicious.
Yeah. So you're a criminologist in background. You've been looking into this, really a deep dive that, you know, when I've read some of your stuff, I'm going, man, there's so many numbers here. It's mind-boggling. But you're detail oriented and you know, sum it up. What's your conclusion that people need to know regarding this Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, their trials? You know, what have you found? What can you say with reasonable confidence?
What can I say? I can say with reasonable confidence that they're simply not to be trusted, and our regulatory agencies are also not to be trusted to protect us from, you know, whatever schemes, whatever bait and switch and any other type of scheme these people want to play on us. Yeah. And I don't think your readers or your viewers will be particularly surprised by that message.
Yeah. There just seems to be fraud on so many levels.
I mean, I thought this was bad. And I mean, look, I'm not the first person that's brought attention to this. Process one, process two. We were able to put some numbers on it and show that there really were only 250 people, you know, wow, who were tested on it. We published something. I was working with Professor Retzef Levy at MIT on this. We published something, rapid response in the British Medical Journal about this. But I was astounded. And you know, this is the type of thing that I think people can get. You know, you can go to your neighbors and your relatives and say, did you know, you know, because people like, really, it was a bait and switch. Like how could they not test this radically different product on, you know, on all these people? Because we were told, ooh, 40,000, you know.
Yeah. And where's the best place people can go to get that information? You know, if people want to do a little deep dive of their own, what's their best place to start?
Okay, well, I haven't Substacked this particular issue yet. There will be a Substack, there will be a post before too long. I have a Twitter thread that's pinned to the top of my Twitter profile.
How do they reach you?
At JoshG99 on Twitter.
Okay. JoshG99.
Yeah.
All right. Well, This is big. As we wrap it up, what's on your horizon next here? I know you're always digging deep and exposing incredible things. What's the update in Israel? You're in Israel right now. What's going on there? Right. With are they still doing passports?
Oh no, things have calmed down quite a bit. But actually, there was a big thing that just happened today, where a sort of mainstream news reporter just announced today. He said that there were some number of months, he didn't say exactly when basically all the journalists in Israel were told, don't say anything bad about the vaccines and don't start denying COVID or anything like that. Like they got orders, right? And they were like, they knew that if they didn't toe the line, they might, you know, be out of a job. He hasn't said yet who it was that who gave them the orders or whatever, but this was kind of a big.
Yeah, let's get that exposed. I mean, we've witnessed it here in the U.S. I mean, the news outlets, mainstream news outlets, they're all saying the exact same thing, like they're reading from a script, which we know they are. Right. And they've pulled this off pretty much worldwide. So we're left with, you know, shows like mine and your independent work, you know, real journalism that's, you know, right, High Wire with Del Bigtree, Children's Health Defense. There's several out there. So thank you for the work you're doing. It's so important, especially when journalism, what the heck happened to journalism?
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. It's a shame. Well, I think the more I learn about it, the more I'm realizing that it's always kind of been like that. Just it's more in your face now, but
yeah, it's really hard to go out there and do independent investigative journalism. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going against the narrative, you're putting yourself at risk.
Yes, so absolutely.
Thank you for being willing to put yourself at risk and bringing this important information to us. Your closing thoughts and words for the viewers.
Yes. I think Dell likes to say we're winning. I really think we are. I mean, nobody's getting vaccinated with COVID vaccines anymore, hardly at all. And more is coming out. It's starting to feel the tide is turning. And I think, you know, once it blows open, I think it's gonna have a domino effect on a lot of things. So just, you know, working hard and hoping, waiting for it to happen.
Yeah. Do you have friends, family members who still don't get it? They're still plugged into the mainstream narrative.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. That part of it to me is that's the biggest heartbreak, right? And in as a pediatrician, I'm retired now, but knowing that they pulled off putting the COVID jab on the childhood schedule, and yes, most of my peers, pediatricians, are going to recommend it because it's recommended by the CDC, and they still have right. total faith and trust in the CDC. I just like, I get so frustrated. I don't know what to do. How do we reach people who seem unable or unwilling to learn anymore?
If I knew the answer to that question,
come on,
I'd
Josh.
Be talking to them instead of to you. No. Well, there's a really nice, there's a really nice resource for this. Actually, it's called reachingpeople.net. So this is the site, reachingpeople.net, and it's created by this guy, David Chirlambalis, who is an amazing communicator, and he understands all this stuff about, you know, NLP, and he's basically been spending most of the pandemic trying to understand how do we connect with people who don't kind of agree with us. And they've got all kinds of resources here on the site, little videos with vignettes, and they have regular Zoom meetings, and he's a great guy, and they're just doing fabulous work. And I've tried some of the stuff, and I can tell you that it works, at least to some degree. I mean, I was able to convince my parents and my siblings to stop getting the COVID jabs, in part thanks to some of the tips that I got from him, and in other situations I've been able to benefit from this. So I really recommend people check this out.
Fantastic. Well, there you have it, folks. Reachingpeople.net and yep. jackanapes.substack.com for your right. Substack. It's
right.
data packed, always good information. Thanks once again for reaching out to us.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Dee Dee Hoover. Guess what? I have Dr. Paul with me today. Hi, Dr. Paul.
No kidding. Hi, Dee Dee.
I decided, you know, it's time. I get so many emails. We've been doing wellness coaching. We've had a lot going on. So
you are on the receiving end of almost all the communications.
Mm-hmm. Compliments, insults. I get it all.
And you have some questions, I understand.
Do you recommend the vaccine-friendly plan anymore?
So the short answer is no. But let me explain in a little more detail. Some of you know I wrote that book in 2016. When you write a book, it's a work of about 2 to 3 years minimum. Mm-hmm. You get your research done, you write a draft, you get multiple edits that takes about a year with the publisher, and then you publish. So Jennifer and I, my co-author and I, were thinking to ourselves, by the time that was actually released, we weren't so sure it was exactly what we would recommend even back then. Mm-hmm. And the main reason is there's a couple factors that are huge. Aluminum toxicity is a very big issue, and we've learned so much more since that book was published, that there's just massively too much aluminum. It's insane how much aluminum we're injecting into babies. I mean, just the hepatitis B alone, which I don't recommend in that book for newborns anyway. It's more like wait till later.
That's never been recommended, correct?
What's never been recommended?
Hep B at birth.
Yes, it's on the CDC schedule.
No, by you.
Not by me.
Right.
But the total cumulative aluminum, even in the vaccine-friendly plan, is too much.
Right.
And Jack Lyons-Wheeler and I published a study that showed that. It's about 3 to 6% of infants are above safe levels for their first 7 months. Contrast that with 30 to 70% of infants are above safe levels with the CDC schedule. But nobody should be injecting a known neurotoxin like aluminum that keeps kids above safe levels. So the vaccine-friendly plan's not safe, period. It's
so should we burn the book?
No. Let me explain why it still has a role, but it's a limited role. We all, most of us, some of us were raised with parents who absolutely knew so much about vaccines and vaccine risk that they didn't vaccinate their kids, period. Mm-hmm. They knew from the get-go this was not a place they were going. Well, those individuals, if that's your thinking, you don't need that book.
Right.
Because that book's only going to raise questions and make you wonder whether you should vaccinate, and I don't think you should. I'm now in a position, knowing what I know, that while there's no one-size-fits-all, and there will be situations where it makes sense to give a certain vaccine to a certain person, for the most part, most people will be far better off if they don't vaccinate at all. Whoa. Right? I mean, a pediatrician saying don't vaccinate, that just doesn't seem to add up well.
A retired pediatrician, by the way.
They can't take my license now. No. No joking on this issue. This is a matter of life and death for so many kids. So the reason it really does make sense not to vaccinate is you're weighing risks and benefits. And so when I'm coaching parents who are trying to figure this out, that's where we start. You know, if they're not exactly sure what to do, first of all, I'll talk to the parents and say, you know, are you on the same page? And see if we can reach an understanding vaccine by vaccine. Because here's the issue. With every single decision you make, you need to weigh risks and benefits. Most pediatricians will tell you, oh, vaccines are safe and effective. So the risks are almost zero. Oh, it's one in a million that you'll be harmed. And they'll tell you the benefits are up here. The truth of the matter is, it's exactly the opposite. How do I know that? Well, my own data. I've shared with you all in the past, when the board emergently took my license in 2020, I got busy. Well, actually, right before that, what caused them to take my license, I believe, is the publication of the Vaxxed Unvaxxed study that they asked for.
Well, I was going to say, so let's backtrack a little bit to help people really understand. When you wrote the vaccine-friendly plan, based on all of your years as a pediatrician and seeing the harm that it had and the studies on aluminum, so forth, right? So you write this book because it is safer than the CDC schedule.
Correct.
You write the book, and then, of course, the medical board is coming after you and saying, well, prove it.
Right.
So then the study happened.
Correct.
So then you yourself, amongst millions of the rest of us, see, because you do not have a huge population in your practice at that time, that were CDC schedule. So most of the
almost
children.
Almost none.
Right. So the children in the study were vaccine friendly plan compared to unvaccinated.
Yes. So those of you who haven't seen that study, we'll put up an image for you that'll kind of like, whoa, the orange line are the vaccinated, but their vaccine-friendly plan vaccinated. I think people get confused and they think, oh, that's the CDC schedule. And the green line for unvaxxed, oh, wow, obviously it's safer to be unvaxxed. Compared to what? Well, it's compared to the vaccine-friendly plan. And when I got that data, it was like, oh my gosh, it's way worse than I thought. Mm-hmm. I did not realize the extent to which the vaccine-friendly plan is causing harm. I mean, the CDC schedule, way worse, but it's an unacceptable level of medical, chronic medical conditions, acute infections, allergies, asthma, ADD, ADHD, almost anything we looked at. The kids on the vaccine-friendly plan had 400%, sometimes more, of those issues compared to the unvaxxed.
But I do think it's still important, and I'm, trust me, you know me, I'm not a fan of the CDC schedule whatsoever, and I also have doubts with the vaccine-friendly plan. But the vaccine-friendly plan is safer than the CDC schedule.
Way
safer. I still
safer.
Feel like that is very important to point out.
Absolutely.
So for those that struggle, and there are people who will, they will vaccinate their child. So yes, spreading them out. And I think your book has opened up a lot for a lot of people that don't even come to you. Other practices are, and a few in this area, in Portland, Oregon, and I've heard of some more and more, we're hearing of some across the United States that are allowing people to spread them out. You can stay in our practice if you're gonna vaccinate, even if you vaccinate slowly, but yes, the unvaccinated children are healthier than those that are vaccinated by both.
Yeah. No, the data in that book is real. It was from my practice for those first 7-8 years. If you've read the book or seen the table in the back, it shows no autism in my practice. That was true to some extent. There were actually 3 kids who were looking autistic, but they regained normality, if you will. Their symptoms went away. So at the time of looking at that data, there was no autism in the vaccine-friendly plan group. Lots of it in the CDC vaccinated folks in my practice. So yes, it's way safer than the CDC schedule. But as that data in my research showed, doing nothing is leaps and bounds safer as well. So the book has value, especially for those people who are going to vaccinate. They just can't wrap their head around not doing anything.
Right.
Well, then where do you start? That's one place. If you're listening to this and you're wondering, that would be a perfect opportunity to get a coaching session with me, because I can walk you through the finer points, the reasons to rethink each of the vaccines one by one by one. And maybe your biggest concern is tetanus, or maybe it's measles. Well, then we go into the exact information on those conditions. It's not that there's no risk not vaccinating. I mean, if you don't vaccinate, there's a risk, but it's teeny weeny. These diseases are largely gone. And so
you walk people through that. I mean, I listen to your coaching and it's phenomenal, but I think the other thing is you're getting history too. I think that people also need to know and understand that part of it is our own background, our own medical conditions, our own past history, so forth.
Absolutely.
And when we didn't know things, it's hard to know better. Now that we're learning that there's things that affect and make someone more susceptible to having an issue with a vaccine, but you get that history. So I think that's what's really important to point out, is that that's where that coaching comes in, that personal touch. And same thing with when people who've had vaccine injured children or kids who are going through something, the wellness coaching offers an opportunity to learn your history, and you do that so well, and find out what's going to be best for that child. There is no one thing fits everybody.
Yeah. There's no one size fits all.
That's what I was looking
in
for.
The CDC schedule, and nor is it on the vaccine friendly plan. Mm-hmm. The only size that fits all is doing nothing. Trusting your God-given natural immune system to take care of you. But you're absolutely right. When we discuss vaccines, we're also discussing, as you pointed out, family history. What's going on in your community? I mean, if you're in the midst of a massive measles outbreak, you know, you might want to think about getting an MMR, especially if your child's over 3 years of age, for example. I mean, you might. So we go through all the variables of what makes sense for you.
And that's, I want to point that out, is that I think the greatest part about the way that you coach is he listens. He's listening, he's hearing, and he's giving the education. And 35 years of working with kids and seeing. The other thing I want to point out is in your practice, someone said, he didn't have any kids that were CDC, you know, fully vac. You did. Those were the kids that ended up, when they stopped vaccinating because of pretty severe effects and injuries, were kicked out of that other practices because those doctors were like, oh, that's just normal. So if you're going to stop vaccinating now, and they turned to integrated pediatrics at that time. And so you did have those kids.
Absolutely.
And those families learned. And you saw all the things. They weren't part of that study because they weren't born into your practice.
Right.
But I think that's a big piece, is to know that there's vaccine injury, there's vaccine effects, and there's things you can do about it.
Absolutely. So the data from my book included CDC vaccinated individuals because, like you pointed out, families would get kicked out of other practices, or they just wanted to do things differently and their doctors weren't cooperating. They were feeling bullied. So they ended up in integrative peds. I personally have listened to hundreds of stories where I've got the couple sitting across from me, usually one or both are just bawling their eyes out, telling me their story about they took their child into the pediatrician, they were following doctor's advice, they got the vaccines, and then they lost their kid to autism. They watched a regression either fairly quickly or over a few weeks or months. And it's tragic. I mean, how can you not be sensitive to what's going on for these families. And then their doctors are trying to say, oh, it was a coincidence, and they want you to vaccinate your next child the same way. Well,
or keep vaccinating the child.
The child who's already injured. I mean, the reason kids did better at integrative peds, even with the vaccine friendly plan that was not friendly enough, as I now know, is that when we did see problems, we stopped. We right. didn't keep hammering them with the vaccines when their body is telling you. So like parents, this is one of my biggest recommendations. If you are vaccinating and you see anything, any change that's negative, it could be in the area of language, your language progression stops or regresses, or it could be eye contact that used to be there and now your kid's like avoiding eye contact, or maybe they're just getting a little clumsier than usual, either gross motor or fine motor. Those are less common, but the social and the language are first to go usually, or at least give you a clue, right, that something's going on.
What about severe allergies?
Absolutely. So the biggest finding from my data, and Miller and Hooker have published two different articles, same findings, vaccines are triggering enormous increases in allergies and autoimmune.
Asthma,
eczema, allergic rhinitis, urticaria, which is itchiness. These are all triggered by vaccines. This is the thing. Regular doctors, my peers, are completely unaware that almost all these medical conditions that they're treating, they don't know why they're happening, they're just treating. Oh, you have a problem? I've got a pill, or I've got a shot, or I've got an inhaler. If you weren't vaccinating, those problems wouldn't be there to begin with. Now, that's not 100%,
right.
But largely that's the truth.
And not that severe. I have seen a couple of the, in fact, recently with all the pollen around here, a couple of kiddos that have had reactions to even food sensitivities or reactions to pollen or outside things that are unvaccinated. It doesn't mean, because our world is still toxic. There's still things that are happening that our immune system has to, you know, come up and fight. And so, yes, those things are still there. It's just that the, again, whether it's the aluminum, the other ingredients, I don't know, I'm not a doctor. But like you said, it's having an effect. So if you stop that, at least stop it until the issue isn't there anymore.
Right.
And do the things to help the child be healthier.
Absolutely. So this is the other thing we discuss when we're coaching, is what can you do?
Right.
Right. If your child is affected, we're not diagnosing, we're not prescribing, we're not treating, we're coaching on wellness factors that, believe it or not, folks, probably 90 to 95% of what is happening for your life or your child's life is lifestyle related. There are things you can do, and we can coach on that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is it's whether it's nutritional, getting more exercise, no matter what it is, it's education. And I think that's what's important, is we do the work, we do the research, we're constantly learning, and you do that, and you have lots of years of experience. And again, it's not one size fits all. So it's getting the history, learning what's happening. And I always call it trial and error, trying different things, trying you. Dr. Paul is the number one trier that I've ever known. We hear about something new, and it's ordered, and he tries it on himself first. I don't know that there's a supplement
that I haven't
out there
tried.
That you haven't tried.
And, oh, my gosh.
And I think that's what's important, though. I love that. I let him try out everything, and if it's something that seems like it makes sense and no reaction, then I take it.
Yeah, my poor kids did the same back then as I was learning. I'm not going to give anything to a patient of mine that I haven't tried myself. And so when I was a pediatrician, of course, so all these things for kids, let's try them out on my kids. So,
they
survived. They survived. I should mention that this amazing woman sitting with me, who's grilling me on all of this, Dee Dee Hoover, is an amazing wellness coach. And I've seen you help people, well, in the vaccine world, you help them with advocacy, how to advocate for yourself and your child with attitude. Mm-hmm. And with attitude doesn't mean you're going in guns a-blazing. There's a way to do it, because people need to be prepared. Most pediatric offices will, I would just plain and simple call it, bully you. They will try to make you feel like a bad parent for not vaccinating. Like, how could you dare? put your child's at risk and put others at risk, which, by the way, that's a false narrative. Once you have my data in your hands and you realize, wow, the unvaccinated almost never get sick, they're so far so healthy, they're the ones who are protecting everybody else because they're not bringing sickness to the community. Mm-hmm. So, but you've got to go into those visits if you have a standard pediatric practice where they don't really understand these issues, armed with how you're going to advocate.
Right, and that positive attitude, that's what I call it, advocating with attitude, but it's a positive, loving, kind attitude, because if you go in, you know, ready to fight, then of course, then the walls go up and there's defensiveness. And so working with families and even kids, I love coaching teens because it's not just doctors where the bullying is taking place. And I probably hear more of this than you do, but it's kids at college, kids that go to school. I work with parents where the kids are even saying, I have to get vaccinated. I need to get vaccinated. I need to get the shot because everyone else is getting the shot and I don't want to be the only one that doesn't get a shot. And then if I get sick, I mean, I've heard every story, and that's the thing, is the world is bullying us. Those that are of us that are unvaccinated, I mean, I as a therapist have been mistreated because I'm not vaccinated. How can I put all these kids at risk?
Same thing. Yep.
I know. And so it's the same pieces, helping people understand about when they've made a decision that's good for them and owning that decision and being willing to live with that decision and how to share with others in a way that they can hear, and maybe they'll hear something that they need to hear. I'll share something real quick. I had a mom the other day who is really concerned about another child that's in her little boy's music class. And she knows that what's happened is vaccine injury, but she can't say anything. And she goes, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to tell other people. And I said, but you know, don't you want to share that? Oh, that's not my job. They say something negative to me and I can't handle it. And so I had told her, I said, that's the thing, is the more people that are willing to talk about the decisions they've made and how healthy their children are, he's never been sick. He's as healthy. And the mom, even the other mom, said, wow, your child's never been sick and he's doing so well. So say, yeah. And if she says, you know, well, what's the secret? How are you keeping him so well? Oh, we didn't vaccinate him. Share it.
If you can get her to ask that question, then you're golden. The hard part is you've got this incredible knowledge and information. It's almost like a secret. Unvaxxed kids are really, really healthy. It's amazing. What I've got here is amazing. You want them to ask, well, what is it that you've got there that you're holding your hands? Ah, let me let you, you know, now I can share it. If I go, blah, 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 which was my mistake for so long, I'm just passionate, boom, 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 I want you to know what I know, the walls go up.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the piece, is because there is, like you said, there's that small risk of not vaccinating. And so other people are going to, they're going to have their concerns. And even if you're quiet and careful about it, that's the thing, is you don't know what you're going to get back at you.
Right.
So if you are not armed and ready and feel good about your own decisions, you're not going to be able to share help with anyone else. And so, yeah. Peter can edit that part out too. So now that we have discussed the vaccine friendly plan, do you feel like you covered all of that?
So
I have a question.
Okay.
So if you don't recommend it anymore, and I know what you recommend now, getting the coaching and things, so why don't you write another book?
Aha.
Aha.
So I really wanted to go back to my publisher and say, we need to do a revised vaccine-friendly plan. I got a big no from my agent, my co-author, and the publisher. What happens in publishing books is they take a huge risk with every major publisher who accepts a manuscript and writes a contract, because they pay you up front to write the book.
Right.
And they paid us fairly well. Well, it was written and published in 2016, just this last quarter. We got our first royalty check, which means we finally paid them back.
For
what they paid us. So they are only now starting to make a little bit of money. And they don't want to stop that flow.
Right.
Right? Because they're finally, I mean, we get a single digit percentage that we share.
Right.
They get the rest.
Right.
So they're now able to make some real money, and they will not.
Well, I understand that
there will be another book.
Right. And we know some people who are like, that book should be pulled off because it's not safe. It serves a purpose.
Right.
There are people. Has that book caused harm? Yeah, we know of a few children that followed that plan, and they have had some of those issues from being vaccinated.
Yep.
But we know hundreds who've been followed. Right. But had they followed CDC, it could have even been worse.
Right.
So I think that, yes, and I encourage you, I think there should be another book. But I think the thing that's important is that there's more to it than just the vaccines. And so that's where the Kids First Forever program that we've been passionately sharing is all four of those areas have to be considered.
Yep.
So when you write the next book, let me know.
I will. Let me point out the following. If you are trying to reach a family member, loved one, or friend who is all in on the CDC schedule, the Vaccine Friendly Plan is a great place to start. But I would urge you to include in it at least the one-page graph from our Vaxxed Unvaxxed study, because as you share, this is an amazing book, because it's not just about vaccines, by the way. I put that in the title because that was an emphasis of the book, but it's a good what to do as a pediatrician, and it goes chronologically from pregnancy to birth to the 2-week to the 4-month.
As a parent,
what things are important for raising a child. Sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah, you said pediatrician. Yeah, they should probably pay attention too.
They should read it too.
But it's the parent.
Right. But if you don't include the study that shows the outcomes of the vaccine-friendly plan compared to unvaxxed, you haven't done them a full service of getting them really informed. So they can read the vaccine-friendly plan as they start to understand the issues involved, then look at that graph and go, oh, wow. Even the vaccine-friendly plan is not safe enough. Maybe I ought to rethink whether I want to do vaccines at all. It's a book to get you to start thinking. So please, if you're sharing it, and please do, if you've got somebody that's stuck on the CDC schedule, I think once you get the mind opened, and that book does it well, it's very well peer-reviewed, referenced, and you got to start somewhere. We weren't all born vaccine risk aware. Right. I mean, we believe in the CDC, or I used to. I don't anymore.
Well, and we should be able to trust those agencies.
We're supposed to be able to trust the National Institute of Health. It sounds amazing. The Center for Disease Control sounds amazing. Public health officials, sounds like they have our interests at the top of their list. Turns out, after COVID, we learned something kind of shocking.
That's not true.
Our interests are almost not in the equation.
Right.
It's all about money and promoting vaccines and the profits for the pharmaceutical industry. I was literally shocked to realize it was that bad. I knew it wasn't right, but I had no idea it was that bad.
Yeah, and don't you think just the whole medical industry period has changed? It's like you said, I've heard you say it's sick care versus well care. And that's the thing. I'm hearing more and more people that they're not even going to a pediatrician anymore. They're going to naturopathic doctors and chiropractics for the care of their children, or some of the midwives are seeing these babies just because the parents don't want things pushed on their child.
Yeah. You know who had it right from the get-go?
God.
Yes, and the Amish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dr. Paul is real big into the Amish.
I was just reading something this morning, in fact, and it was like, I didn't know this, but in April of 2020, mm-hmm. they just allowed coronavirus to run through their community. Mm-hmm. They had natural immunity way before there was a vaccine. And to my knowledge, nobody has shown that there was a single death in the unvaccinated Amish, right. And most are unvaccinated.
I'm so glad of how you feel about the vaccine-friendly plan. And thank you for coaching.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Now, just to throw a twist to this. So you're a new mom. You've just had a baby. What's the most important thing that you think other moms need to know?
Thank you for asking that. Working with so many newborns and babies, the thing I'm noticing and realizing is you know as mama and even as dad, we know what's best for our children. Hold them, love them. And as soon as they're born, nothing happens to these babies. They don't need a thing. All they need is mama's milk, and they need love, And if they're really tight, they might need some body work. But all they need is us. They need love. They need care. They need compassion. They don't need anything else yet. Let everything that God gave them, let it grow. Let it become everything they need to survive.
Yep. So folks, new parents, trust that silent inner voice, that intuition, that gut feeling, whatever it is. You have to quiet the noise and you'll know.
So thanks for letting me ask you a million questions today.
Thank you, Dee Dee.
And keep sending in all of the wonderful questions that everybody has. I do read them. And again, go to kidsfirst4ever.com. If you would like to learn more about coaching and how to access either one of us and learn more.
Thank you for watching. I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.